Hello and welcome to another Natter That Matters. And today really matters because when I met this sassy woman called Sassy, I mean, you just can't get, I'm joyful and joy and then sassy is sassy and sassy. yeah, we connected immediately and we thought, oh, we should do something together, sassy and joy. I mean, they're great words to have. And so Sassy is an aphantasia coach. And even though I've been coaching for a long time and I train and certify coaches, I said, what's that? And because Sassy said exactly, that's what the world needs to know. So welcome to Natter That Matters, Sassy. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. And thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So what, let's just start there, shall we? What is aphantasia? Because there's a lot of people going, what? Sounds like a Disney movie. That's what I thought. Like,
yeah, I do sometimes refer to myself as aphantastic.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
So aphantasia is a neurological condition. And it's basically people who have it are unable to visualize. We don't have a mind's eye, but it actually covers more than just visuals. It means not being able to access that internal imaginary world that we can all, well, not we, because clearly not me, because I have this, where people are able to visualize and they can hear sounds in their minds and they can recreate the smells and tastes and other senses in their minds. So people with aphantasia have got no access to that. So yeah, we can't visualize.
Wow. Oh my God, I spent my whole life doing that. That would be, oh yeah, that would be painful. So you've not got any internal representation of everything that's going on outside to be recalled. Yeah. So it's all just outside of you.
Exactly.
So I mean, that's a, God, my head wants to go down. No wonder we sat and chatted. We could have done so. In fact, we should never get together with wine. It's a whole week affair, I reckon. We'd be sitting by our sun lounge or somewhere. Yeah, quite fascinating then of how that happens.
Yeah.
So, instead, and I suppose you don't even know the answer because you don't know what happens in my mind or the mind of someone that doesn't have aphantasia, or do you? I don't know
how. Well, I can give you a really I think it's funny representation of what I know happens in my mind as opposed to what happens in my husband's mind. I asked him when he thinks about our imagines and thinks about our dog barking, what happens? And he said, well, I see Bosco like jumping up and down, being very excited. And I hear the sound of him barking. And he said, what happens to you? And I said, well, I think about, because I know what Bosco is, you know, I know he's my dog. I could describe him to you. So I think about him doing something that would make him bark. And then in my head, I hear my own voice going woof or bark, like saying the word of what the action is. So if somebody said, you know, imagine, could you hear a horse like whinnying? Then I would probably hear myself just going, nay. You know, it's me doing it, not the sound of the actual thing. So that's a very kind of a quick.
Yeah. So it's almost like you won't allow the representation and the memory of the thing is all from your perspective, nothing from outside of you. Would that be right?
Well, I think it's more that. So if you were to, as a visualizer now, if you were to imagine that inside your mind, all of your images and your memories, because of it's for not obviously, but for some of us, we have a memory related issue, which I also have. And they're all in a box. And you just go and you select the one out of the box and you choose your memory of whatever it is and your experience of whatever it is. And you choose that. For me, the box is there. It's just the lid's shut and it's locked and I haven't got a key for that box. So whilst everything is there and it's all internally, it's all there inside my mind, actually bringing it to the forefront of my mind is something that I'm not capable of doing. So it's the same. So when it comes to the visualizing, imagine that you're looking, you're working on your computer, it's all working fine, and then the screen goes completely blank. You know everything is in your computer and your computer is switched on and everything's there saved in the memory, but you can no longer see it in order to be able to retrieve that.
I hear you. I use that metaphor a lot anyway, because it is a really good one of the subconscious conscious. So it's almost like somebody cuts off the keyboard and the screen. Like it's just them, the unit, basically, and nothing can be accessed.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never heard of this. So, you know, I'm really grateful to it coming into my frame. But I'm wondering then, did you spend a lot of time with coaches who thought that you had shut down memories from past traumas? I can imagine if someone came to me with that without any knowledge, I'd be thinking, I need to unlock that box then. I need to reconnect you and your conscious and your, I would have spent a lot of time doing that. So did you do that?
You're not. Yeah. I mean, so I've sort of been coaching for about 30 years. I get probably about more than that. But I only realized in 2015 that I had this condition. Up to 2015, I thought everybody was the same and that visualization was just a concept. That when you asked me to imagine being on a beach, you just wanted me to tell you in my head, you know, to think about in my head what a beach was and could I think about being there? Well, of course I can do that because I live by the sea. So I'm on the beach with the dog most mornings, so I can do that. But when I would have coaching that tried to, to untap that, to kind of make more of that, I would just get incredibly frustrated. Like I said, I've also got, which a lot of people with aphantasia have, I've also got severely deficient autobiographical memory, SDAM. And that means I've got no access to my life memories, my autobiographical memories.
Wow.
Again, they're there. They're in the filing cabinet. It's locked. I don't have the key. But I make my memories the same way that everybody else does, but I can't retrieve them. And often working with people who would say, well, let's think about an event from your past that might have caused you to feel like you're feeling now, I would struggle to do that. In fact, the only memories that I have of my life are the stories that people tell. And I'm absolutely blessed with the fact that my mum tells the most amazing stories about me, of this really kind of precocious, funny, bright little girl. I'm lucky, still am now, an adult, yeah. And I'm lucky that I have those wonderful stories and not actually really bad stories. And so I'm really blessed in that way. So actually what I couldn't do, you know, when in coaching, when somebody would do that, I would just tell them a story that maybe somebody else had told me about my life, or maybe a story I had told myself about my life. And a lot of the coaches that I worked with, you were very visual heavy. And I didn't know I wasn't visualizing. All I was getting was massively frustrated. I would find myself just going along with it, not really getting anything out of it, and feeling really bad about the fact that I couldn't understand why I wasn't getting the same results personally that I was able to get from people that I was coaching. And I did this whole thing of thinking, like, maybe they're just really rubbish. Maybe their program is just really rubbish. And now I know it's none of that. It was just that they didn't understand how to work with me. And I didn't know they needed to understand something different.
It's fascinating. So I've coached thousands of people like you have, you know, and I'm listening to you looking back and thinking, oh, I wonder if a few clients think, oh, but I couldn't access any of their childhood memories at all. I'm thinking, oh, I wonder if they had Fantasia. And I've got a friend who's an NLP trainer, does it very differently to me, but actually had somebody on her program who said they simply couldn't visualize, and they left the program because of it. And I now look at that and go, oh, so that, you know, and that would make you that level of frustration where there's just no point in me being there. I'm a really visual person, you know, in NLP I'm very high visual, as you can see by my hands and movements. But obviously I do understand the reason I probably survived without knowing about this is because, of course, lots of my clients are kinesthetic, so it's all about how they feel now about stuff. And so then they tell themselves the story probably, and they get back there. So that's probably why I've never really experienced this, but I would imagine a lot of coaches that don't understand, you know, the different representation systems get themselves into a bit of a state with this. Yeah, I can understand.
Yeah, and even so, even that kinesthetic link can sometimes be a problem, because one of the things that we've learned through some kind of neuroscience is that actually often we create our feelings and emotions based on memories and re-experiencing. And so what I found with my life is that actually, I'm 54 now. And what I've realized is that I've spent a large part of my adult life not feeling, not being able to access my feelings. And a lot of people with these conditions are the same. And I think that's because we're not constantly getting them. I like to, again, I'm going to do something really visual as the non-visualizer. I like to think of, we have like this emotional tap And every time you experience a wonderful memory or a sad memory or anything, your tap turns on and it gives you a little drip of emotion. And for me, that tap is switched off because I don't get to experience them. And so I'm very good at experiencing very high and very low end emotions because I think they're so primal. Mm-hmm. I think pure joy and happiness and all of that is just so primal that you can't not feel it. And the same with anger. And I can do those two, top end and bottom end, really well. But everything else in the middle, I'm kind of a bit beige. And I describe it as having just been surface skimming my emotions for most of my adult life, which in some ways is really good because it means that I don't overreact to things. But it's also quite bad because I often don't react at all. When I should be experiencing an emotion. And then even when I am feeling an emotion, I struggle sometimes to identify exactly what that is.
Yeah.
That's alexithymia. And alexithymia is something that people who have aphantasia and SDAM also have. So you get this kind of, it's almost like we're layering, you know, up the issues for coaching when it comes to working with people like me. And there are more people like me than there are adults with ADHD. But we all know about ADHD. Everybody's heard of adult ADHD.
I mean, at the moment, it's rife, isn't it? I mean, everybody's talking about it.
So
hopefully in years to come, this will become something that's widely recognised. Because, you know, as a kid at school, there must have been all sorts of problems in, you know, recalling things there as well, I would imagine. Like,
well, who knows? There are some positives about having these conditions. So I know from the stories that there have been traumatic events in my life, but I never have to see them again.
Yeah.
Can't access the memory of them. The memory is there, but my body remembers them. So I can have a panic attack from a thought I can't access because I don't have an inner monologue. So I don't have a stream of consciousness in my mind. But something can pass through my thoughts that I can't access that can be about the trauma that I experienced.
Trigger the physiological.
Trigger me to have a panic attack. Now I'm really lucky in that I do actually know the cause of my panic attacks, and it's a very physical response. All through growing up, my knees used to dislocate. And so I only have to get on a little bit of icy ground and just do that a bit for my body to go, here it comes, the pain's about to come. And then that can trigger it. And I'm pretty good at managing that now. But a couple of years ago, I had a nervous breakdown. And that was causing me to have panic attacks that I couldn't understand. And I was very unwell, and I really struggled to understand the main causes of that. I had an idea of what some of them were, but I couldn't really get to those thoughts that were causing it, and so that made it challenging. I managed to kind of work my way through it with the help of a therapist, but he was absolutely useless because he'd never heard of any of these conditions and didn't know how to work with me either, and. No. All the traditional kind of CBT stuff was just a waste of my time, really. But there are, as I say, there's some positives, but they're like everything, they come with challenges.
Oh my God, that's what's going on for me. Where did it come into your scope of reference?
So it was 2015. And I've always been a bit of a geek. I've always been a bit of a science geek, which actually fits really well with people with aphantasia because we're in our semantic memories. And so we like facts, figures and general knowledge and data and all of that kind of stuff. And I was reading an article on one of the science pages on Facebook. And it was this guy who was talking about the fact that there was this new name for people who couldn't visualize and that it had just got this name. And I'm reading this article. And as I'm reading this article, I got to the end of it and I went, hang on a minute. Is he saying that when people are saying they're visualizing, they're actually seeing things? my little brain just exploded then, because right up till 2015, I just thought it was a concept.
Right, so you didn't even know.
Didn't know.
We don't know what we don't know, do we? That whole saying is true.
Exactly.
There's like people that are being diagnosed with ADHD and even dyslexia in adulthood, they don't know. They just thought it was normal. It's a bit like when I came out as gay, and I know it's not the same thing, but people say, must have known. No, I didn't know. No, I didn't know. I didn't know that about myself. Sometimes we are completely clueless about ourselves, aren't we?
Yeah.
And what did you do?
Well, so basically, as the kind of the researcher in me went down like a rabbit hole of kind of researching it, and just really pretty much asking everybody, sorry, can you actually see things in your head? So if I asked you to imagine, and really that whole kind of,
even you just saying that word, I'm so visual, Sassy, that you said imagine. Do you remember years ago, I mean, we are, you know, enough with five at the beginning, where you had to have the DOS prompt where it's like you press something and then you're about to put, even when you said that, my head went imagine dot, like it's just in a space waiting for you to tell me what to imagine. That's what I could just see as you said it, like, I mean, that's just, yeah, like, that was hilarious.
It always makes me think of that film, that mission, not Mission Impossible. It was a Tom Cruise film where it's set in the future and he's looking at the screen and he's moving stuff across. Yes.
I know exactly what you mean.
And I now think that that's how visualizers' brains work.
Yeah.
But that you can just swipe that across, and, you know, because I know that some people project as well, which, again, is completely bonkers. And my husband is a hyperphant, so he's got hyperphantasia. So phantasia is a scale. So we've got aphantasia at the bottom, so at with no phantasia, meaning latterly they've changed it to imagination, so it sounds like we haven't got an imagination, but that's not true. Mm-hmm. I've got an imagination, it just doesn't come with images or sounds or taste or feeling or. And then hyperphantasia is right at the top end. And that's those people who are visualizing all the time. It's going off all the time. And you're probably a hyperphant.
I think I'm a hyperphant. I mean, I really am all day long. I mean, I can literally visualize anything and everything. Everything I do, what I call future pacing, NLP, I future pace it in my mind, how I feel, what I'm going to say, how I'm thinking. Like, my whole brain is future focused. Yeah.
And I can't do any of that. Yeah. Well, and so
clients say to me, I don't know how you can see the big picture of everything. How can you, like, you can really see, and I can see the picture of everyone's life, like, really clearly when a client comes, I don't know what I should be doing. I ask them like five questions. It's so clear. I can literally see it. Yeah. No,
I can't go there. Although one of my most favorite expressions is see the bigger picture, even though I can't. I think that's because, you know, my bigger picture is more logic based. So I'll do the whole, I need to run the data on this, and I just need to look at the real logical side of this and do the research. And, you know, all of that is what really gets my brain excited. Now, I have to say that there are some incredibly creative people with aphantasia in the world. I'm not one of them. I cannot do anything creative visually. Ed Catmull, I think his name was the Disney artist who drew the Little Mermaid for the film. He has aphantasia, so he drew her not from something he'd seen in his mind. He just drew her based on his thinking of what she should be like. Head of Pixar also has aphantasia. And so there are some really creative artists out there. And this is where the whole aphantasia mean no imagination is a bit of a misnomer, because it's not that. But if it comes to looking at all the data side of stuff, then yeah, that's my big bag.
And not mine. So you and I are like the complete polar opposites. And actually, I get a lot of clients who can't visualize things because, of course, they want it, and I can. So I actually help them to fill that gap of their business. And actually, you probably can help them with the detail and the data and everything, because that's not my bag, really. Mine's all about learned experience. And yeah, we're the complete opposite. We're a great team. We, you know, the more we talk about this, we would really help someone see it all detail and the big picture, like it, yeah, quite a powerful combination. So how do you help people now? So how can people learn more about this? Like, you must be on a mission.
Well, so one of the things that I realized was that there's about 395 million of me out there. So like I say, 3.9 to 5% of the population at the moment. Personally, I think that will grow because, like you said, you don't know what you don't know. And actually, everybody watching this will be working with clients who have aphantasia, who have no idea that they have aphantasia because people are just discovering it now. And I thought, well, I don't want people to have the same experience that I had, and other people that I've spoken to, other aphants that I've spoken to who've had coaching and had the same really frustrating experience. I don't want that to happen. I want people like me to have the amazing transformative change and that coaching can bring, and that and really be able to experience it in a way that I know that people can. But I don't have a capacity to coach 395 million people as much as I wish I could. So the easiest way I can do it is to coach the coaches who already are doing this transformational work, how to adapt what they do for people like me.
Yeah, lovely.
So I teach about the five kind of main conditions. So aphantasia, anauralia, which is the silent mind, SDAM, which is the lack of memories, alexithymia, so about not being able to access the feelings, and then the last one is dyskinesia, which is not being able to access any of the senses, but that's likely to fall under just an aphantasia umbrella at some point. And I teach the kind of the theory around them, what's happening in the brain from a neuroscience. I'll get my geek on and talk about all of that, but then I relate it to coaching and bring in my coaching experience and being an aphant as well, and teach the skills of how you now practically apply coaching methodology to somebody like me. And I cover things like, how do you goal set with somebody who can't see the future? So problems for aphantasia, aphants, we can't remember our past, so we struggle to learn from the behaviors and the patterns of behaviors that we've developed over time. So we can't bring those to the table to identify what's creating our barriers from our own behavior. And we can't actually see the future because we can't go forwards with our thinking because we're very stuck. And so I teach how to get around that from a goal setting point of view, then how you keep us going when we very obviously have out of sight, out of mind issues. So if you give me an action plan and I can put it somewhere, I can forget about it even being there, I'll forget that it even exists.
Wow.
And so I teach about that. I teach some somatic practices that work with people like me for around getting rid of that blocked energy when actually we can't understand why the energy is blocked. So how we can bypass that. And storytelling, which is a massive thing. So narrative therapy, which is really helpful for people with SDAM because our life is all stories. That's all we have is our stories.
How I got away with not knowing about this, and listening to you, I understand why then. So I do have quite a few clients who we graphically create their map. Like, I've got, okay, and what's going to happen next? So that, oh, I want to, like, and we can make it. And then I've got one client, actually, if she's watching this, she's had the same map for 3 years and she's literally going along. She gets it out. She, like, it's on her wall. She gets it out. Like, she has it. So I'm thinking, actually, I probably naturally adjusted some of the processes, which you do, I suppose, don't you, when you want to really help and when you've been doing it for years. But
and I think also, when you've got, you know, at your level of experience and knowledge of working with, you know, very different people. And I definitely there is a level of adaptation, I think, when people are, you know, masters of their craft.
This must screw their head, because everything you think you know, I mean, obviously I'm an NLP and a coach, you know, I'm everything really, I suppose, but everything you think you know has just been completely wiped out with you, essentially. Not just you, but, you know, our fantasia is like, oh, no, we have to rewrite the rule book on this completely. Exactly. You and they're doing, you know, kind of volunteer clients, you know, or anything where they're trying to get their practice in and they hit upon somebody with aphantasia that could really wreck their confidence as a coach, couldn't it? That, I mean, yeah, I mean, I obviously coach and train coaches, so I think possibly we need to have a chat about how we can get you to come and do something that gives them just insight of how to recognize that person when they're there, because there must be some ways that you could immediately recognize someone with aphantasia, whereas me, I can't visualize stuff. So if you think about what you have for breakfast this morning, what is it like? My brain's just trying to get them to do that. And actually, I suppose there's a few tests you can run as a coach just to make, or anybody actually, and trainers must have the same problem as well. Yeah,
exactly. And interestingly, you saying about breakfast, It was a test of around breakfast that was the very first time that not being able to visualize was picked up in research. And that was in 1880 by Sir Francis Galton. And he asked 100 of his peers, his other professors, to imagine their breakfast table that morning. And 12 of those 100 couldn't do it. In fact, they had no image of what their breakfast table had been. And Sir Francis Galton made a note of it, about how interesting it was that 12 of his peers appeared not to be able to visualize. And yet it was 2015 before it got a name.
Wow.
But you're right. I think one of the biggest things for me, one of the biggest things that I'm out here doing is raising awareness. And even if all it is that other coaches start to think about the fact that maybe their clients can't visualize, and just to ask the question is just brilliant. But not only that, it's about, okay, you can ask the question, can you visualize? If you had asked me in 2013, can I visualize, I would have said yes. Because for me, visualization was a concept. I thought you would be asking me, did I know the thing that you wanted me to think about?
Yeah, I get that
concept of it. And so what's happening right now is that there are people who have aphantasia who are saying yes to the question about visualization without knowing that they can't, because they don't know what the difference between the two is. And that's where that raising awareness really comes from, and just letting people really understand that no, the people who are visualizing are actually seeing things, and then just waiting just to watch the heads explode, like, you know, as mine did.
Wow. It's an education for us all. Every day is a school day. I also can't help thinking, and the whole time I'll be thinking, I wonder if that Fantasia film from Disney came from this. Like, it's just too much of a kind of a coincidence, isn't it?
But
a pretty word, isn't it, to describe something that has been so frustrating for you and probably others.
Yeah,
such a long time. Well, thank you so much for coming and helping us understand more those five areas that you're helping people get education, really, and information, and just be aware of. How can people get hold of you if they want to know more? Can they follow you? Do you kind of do?
So you can find me on Instagram. It's the Aphantasia Coaching Academy. I'm Sassy Smith on Facebook. I'm also, my page is Sassy Smith Aphantasia Academy. And you can email me hello@aphantasiacoach.com. I think the other thing that I just wanted to say about this, which is probably really interesting, and I just didn't want to forget it, is that at the moment there isn't anyone other than me who is coaching specifically in this. And I've had to come out of retirement of coaching because I focused on teaching, because there isn't anybody who's providing this other than me. And as nice as that is to kind of, you know, get my hand back in for actual coaching, because it's been a little while, I want to be able to go, I can just carry on teaching, which I've realized I love just as much as coaching, if not slightly more.
I'm a coach trainer, so teaching, training, in my head, they're the same thing. So educate is finding that knowledge and education, and
so coaches can get stuff from my, you know, off my website. They can read the blogs. There's always some stuff in the blogs about, you know, a little bit of learning in there, watching, you know, my videos talking about it and posting things like that, just to get a bit of an understanding, or, you know, come and take my course.
Yeah, come and take the course. Why not? I know I'm going to be working, doing some work with you. Absolutely. Because I have to be an expert in everything. That's just my ego talking. But I do. Because, of course, I want to be able to help as much as I can everybody that comes and sits in front of me that's my ideal client. And I think quite a lot of my clients possibly have got aphantasia. And I'm just thinking back to quite a few of them in the past. So I don't know if you've got a quiz or anything I can put out to my community, but it'd be quite interesting to see how many. We can do our own poll to find out the percentages, you know? Yeah. So, but yeah, thank you so much, Sassy. Always a joy to be, have, you know, be in your company. And I love that your work, we sit very much in the same of wanting to help change and educate the world and help them all feel better and have a better existence. And I think that says a lot, doesn't it, really? And there's quite a lot of us now that want that for the world. So yes, watch this space. And yeah, if we can help you in any way to on your mission, obviously let us know in the She Enjoys community.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been lovely. Thank you.